Shortly afterward, a young prince, as bright as the day, was born to the queen. But neither his innocence nor beauty could move the cruel hearts of the merciless sisters. They wrapped him up carelessly in his clothes and put him into a basket, which they abandoned to the stream of a small canal that ran under the queen's apartment, and declared that she had given birth to a puppy. This dreadful intelligence was announced to the emperor, who became so angry at the circumstance that he was likely to have occasioned the queen's death if his grand vizier had not represented to him that he could not, without injustice, make her answerable for the misfortune. In the meantime, the basket in which the little prince was exposed was carried by the stream beyond a wall which bounded the prospect of the queen's apartment, and from thence floated with the current down the gardens. By chance, the intendant of the emperor's gardens, one of the principal officers of the kingdom, was walking in the garden by the side of this canal, and perceiving a basket floating, called to a gardener, who was not far off, to bring it to shore that he might see what it contained. The gardener, with a rake which he had in his hand, drew the basket to the side of the canal, took it up, and gave it to him. The intendant of the gardens was extremely surprised to see in the basket a child, which, though he knew it could be but just born, had very fine features. This officer had been married several years, but though he had always been desirous of having children, heaven had never blessed him with any. This accident interrupted his walk. He made the gardener follow him with the child, and when he came to his own house, which was situated at the entrance to the gardens of the palace, went into his wife's apartment. "Wife," said he, "as we have no children of our own, God has sent us one. I recommend him to you. Provide him a nurse, and take as much care of him as if he were our own son, for, from this moment, I acknowledge him as such." The intendant's wife received the child with great joy, and took particular pleasure in the care of him. The intendant himself would not inquire too narrowly whence the infant came. He saw plainly it came not far off from the queen's apartment, but it was not his business to examine too closely into what had passed, nor to create disturbances in the place where peace was so necessary. The following year, another prince was born, on whom the unnatural sisters had no more compassion than on his brother, but exposed him likewise in a basket, and set him adrift in the canal, pretending this time that the sultan had given birth to a cat. It was happy also for this child that the intendant of the gardens was walking by the canal side, for he had it carried to his wife, and charged her to take as much care of it as of the former, which was as agreeable to her inclination as it was to his own. The emperor of Persia was more enraged this time against the queen than before, and she had felt the effects of his anger if the grand vizier's remonstrances had not prevailed. The third year the queen gave birth to a princess, which innocent babe underwent the same fate as her brothers, for the two sisters, being determined not to desist from their detestable schemes till they had seen the queen cast off and humbled, claimed that a log of wood had been borne, and exposed this infant also on the canal. But the princess, as well as her brothers, was preserved from death by the compassion and charity of the intendant of the gardens. Khosrow Shah could no longer contain himself when he was informed of the new misfortune. He pronounced sentence of death upon the wretched queen, and ordered the grand vizier to see it executed. The grand vizier and the courtiers who were present cast themselves at the emperor's feet to beg of him to revoke the sentence. "Your majesty, I hope, will give me leave," said the grand vizier, "to represent to you that the laws which condemn persons to death were made to punish crimes. The three extraordinary misfortunes of the queen are not crimes, for in what can she be said to have contributed toward them? Your majesty may abstain from seeing her, but let her live. The affliction in which she will spend the rest of her life, after the loss of your favour, will be a punishment sufficiently distressing." The emperor of Persia considered with himself, and reflecting that it was unjust to condemn the queen to death for what had happened, said, Let her live, then. I will spare her life, but it shall be on this condition, that she shall desire to die more than once every day. Let a wooden shed be built for her at the gate of the principal mosque, with iron bars to the windows, and let her be put into it, in the coarsest habit. And every Mussulman that shall go into the mosque to prayers shall heap scorn upon her. If anyone fail, I will have him exposed to the same punishment. And that I may be punctually obeyed, I charge you, Vizier, to appoint persons to see this done." The Emperor pronounced his sentence in such a tone that the Grand Vizier durst not further remonstrate. And it was executed to the great satisfaction of the two envious sisters. A shed was built, and the Queen, truly worthy of compassion, was put into it, and exposed ignominiously to the contempt of the people, which usage she bore with a patient resignation that excited the compassion of those who were discriminating and judged of things better than the vulgar. The two princes and the princess were, in the meantime, nursed and brought up by the intendant of the gardens and his wife with the tenderness of a father and mother. And as they advanced in age, they all showed marks of superior dignity, which discovered itself every day by a certain air which could only belong to exalted birth. All this increased the affections of the intendant and his wife, who called the eldest Prince Bahman, and the second Perviz, both of them names of the most ancient emperors of Persia, and the princess Perizade, which name also have been borne by several queens and princesses of the kingdom. As soon as the two princes were old enough, the intendant provided proper masters to teach them to read and write, and the princess, their sister, who was often with them, showing a great desire to learn, the intendant, pleased with her quickness, employed the same master to teach her also. Her vivacity and piercing wit made her, in a little time, as great a proficient as her brothers. From that time, the brothers and sister had the same masters in geography, poetry, history, and even the secret sciences, and made so wonderful a progress that their tutors were amazed, and frankly owned that they could teach them nothing more. At the hours of recreation, the princess learned to sing and play upon all sorts of instruments. And when the princes were learning to ride, she would not permit them to have that advantage over her, but went through all the exercises with them, learning to ride also, to bend the bow, and dart the reed or javelin, and oftentimes outdid them in the race and other contests of agility. The intendant of the gardens was so overjoyed to find his adopted children so accomplished in all the perfections of body and mind, and that they so well requited the expense he had been at in their education, that he resolved to be at a still greater. For, as he had until then been content simply with his lodge at the entrance of the garden, and kept no country house, he purchased a mansion at a short distance from the city, surrounded by a large tract of arable land, meadows, and woods. As the house was not sufficiently handsome nor convenient, he pulled it down, and spared no expense in building a more magnificent residence. He went every day to hasten, by his presence, the great number of workmen he employed, and as soon as there was an apartment ready to receive them, passed several days together there, when his presence was not necessary at court. And by the same exertions, the interior was furnished in the richest manner, in consonance with the magnificence of the edifice. Afterward he made gardens, according to a plan drawn by himself. He took in a large extent of ground, which he walled around and stocked with fallow deer, that the princes and princess might divert themselves with hunting when they chose.